When was the last time you were interviewed by legal authorities? When were you asked to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you God. Here, John 18:33, in his last hours, Jesus is so interviewed by Pontius Pilate. Such a strange gospel passage, wherein the one interviewed becomes the questioner, wherein the one accused levies accusation, wherein the one intending to interrogate is himself interrogated, wherein not power, but truth has the last word. The Holy Scripture, the strange world of the Bible, is holy because it is healthy, and you need its nourishment, its strange teaching, far more than any other watery diet of merely spiritual meditation. Jesus said, "You say that I am a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." From June 24th, 2018 to August 4th, 2018, we had only 2 days of real rain. From June 24th, 2018 to August 4th, 2018, we had also had only 2 days without grandchildren of some number and assortment and age with us. They were not the same 2 days. On the evening of August 4th, we set out with our dear friends for dinner at a nearby restaurant. An experience of warning soon ensued. Now and then, the gospel itself comes in a word of warning. In 1959, our family moved to the little college town of Hamilton, New York, where we attended 7 years of grammar school, where and when grammar was taught in grammar schools. The evening of August 4th, 2018, we drove over Hamilton Hill, where once our scout troop had hiked. We passed Andy McGonis' farm, he who in the sixth grade starred with me in a two-voice drama, Brainy and Brawny, about a strong good person and a smart bad person. The better title might have been Brawny and Scrawny. Andy is still farming his family land 50 years later down the road from where my friend Bill lived as a Colgate senior. By the way, if you happen to enter the town from the northwest, as we did that night, be sure to slow down after Andy's barn to the legal 30 miles per hour limit, even though the road seems a 55 mile per hour roadway. Otherwise, you will contribute unwillingly, ticketed for speeding, to the township budget, funded in part by this strange particular passage. We moved from Hamilton in 1966, but I've been there through the summers for part of every year since, or I have been there ever since. That night, the twilight gleamed and we were celebrating. I noted Andy's farm and with body memory slowed to 30 miles per hour. Our friends who have 11 grandchildren to our mere 7 were also for the moment grandchildless on the lake and ready for a nice evening. Coming down Hamilton Hill, I remembered my 40th birthday, on the evening of which I had driven down the same hill to hear my old teacher, Cornell West, hold 1,000 Colgate students, mesmerized as he spoke without notes, but with wise passion for 90 minutes. After the entry to town from this odd angle, there is a crossing onto the main street that involves a tangled intersection with one yield and one stop sign within 20 feet of each other. I navigated the intersection and headed into town when, you will recognize in viscera the moment, red lights swirled behind me atop a local police SUV. We pulled over. A portly policeman about my age came to us, and you can write the next lines yourselves. May I see your license and registration, please? Do you know why we are having this conversation? Here, for the younger, I simply note that one never says anything like yes to that question. Your answer is, I truly have no idea, Ossifer. No, I don't. Well, you went right through the stop sign back there. Again, for the younger, I note, the response here is no response. Are you aware of that? Well, no, actually, I did not recognize that. Well, you did. Now, I assume that he was right, and I came to a rolling but not full stop at the aforementioned intersection. Whether I did or not does not matter. It is his view that matters. A long pause ensued, during which he surveyed the audience, the driver, an aging white guy with a comb over, as my son likes to describe me, and three other Caucasian passengers with white hair. For once, I was delighted to be an aging white guy with a comb over. While the portly policeman pondered his next move, I fleetingly wondered what would have happened if I had been 28 years old, black, with dreadlocks, or alone, female, and 25, or Hispanic, speaking limited English with children in the back seat, or Japanese with a newborn and not fully sure of the ways of our people, like our daughter-in-law, a native of Kyoto, who had flown back to San Diego that afternoon. Yes, this was one good time to be an older white balding and fellow and accompanied by similar Q-tips fore and aft. Well, said the officer, you did slow down coming into town. That was good. But that intersection does have both a yield sign and a stop sign. And you went right through the stop sign. I'm going to give you a warning. Learn from it. Have a nice evening going out to dinner. But remember, you have passengers with you, and we have a town here that we want to keep safe. And with that, he returned my license and registration and shook my hand. I come back to the warning in a minute. As a 12-year-old, I left my hometown of Hamilton in 1966. By 1986, Jan and I were in ministry with a struggling urban regional church in Syracuse, an hour north and west of Hamilton. The church was growing thanks to excellent lay leadership and a willingness to engage the neighborhood with a new daycare center, a renewed nursery school, two new scout troops, a new writer's project, a new senior citizens program, a new dance school, and an added second Sunday service. People tolerated the preacher largely because they liked his family. One couple, Pam and Josiah, a 30-year-old African-American couple, joined us perhaps in part because our congregation, like that of Marsh Chapel today, had become solidly racially integrated, say 30% people of color with 200 in worship on Sunday. One night we had Pam and Josiah to dinner. They later left our church with some struggle and misgiving because our bishop planted a black congregation in the same part of the city, and they felt they had to support him in that. But for some years, they helped lead the church, were tithing and faithful in worship, and were good, happy people to have around. She was a partner in a law firm downtown, and he taught at, of all places, Colgate in my hometown in the religion department. Over dinner, we listened to music Jan had chosen and which Josiah appreciated. We got better acquainted. At one point, I expostulated on the bucolic joys of Hamilton, where I'd learned to skate and to play hockey, where I fished in the swan pond at will, where we stole freshman beanies off the heads of newcomers, where I pitched for the Little League, and where I became a tenderfoot scout and camped in the woods in February, where Andy McGonis and I became friends, and where we were enthralled by the Colgate-funded fireworks every year on the 4th of July. Pam and Josiah listened graciously. After the lengthy peroration, I asked, "Josiah, how do you like teaching at Colgate and being in Hamilton part of each week?" I will never forget his reply. It was a warning. "It is a hostile environment," he replied. Of course, he did so with grace and acknowledged my own experience and was endlessly careful not unnecessarily to offend, but he was honest, not just kind, but kind and honest. For a 30-year-old black man with a beard and horn-rimmed glasses, Hamilton could be pretty hostile territory. I knew that, sort of, but I knew it well when he said so. As our portly officer retreated, Josiah came to mind. What would have happened had he been the driver and not me? Maybe the outcome would have been the same. I know that evening the policeman would have fully noticed my own Massachusetts license plate, and on a weekend when the Red Sox beat the Yankees 4 straight games at Fenway, things Boston were not popular there in the heart of New York. But the officer forgave the Boston license, even though a ticket for an out-of-towner is low-hanging fruit. Maybe he would have been equally gracious with Josiah. However, only 20 miles north from Hamilton some years ago, our son, then with shoulder-length hair and a tank top, was pulled over before the policeman saw my wife sitting next to her son. She had been slumped in the seat, sleeping. Surprised, the officer made some comment and moved on. He had wanted to ticket a hippie, perhaps, but then Mom reared her head and he moved on. On August 4th, I was given a needed, just, and kindly warning. Be careful when you go through that intersection again. I took it to heart. We had a fine summer dinner, and I drove home later at 4 miles an hour. Warnings matter in the little and in the large. They are gifts, often kindly shared, like the portly officer's warning gift to me, like Josiah's warning gift to me. Be careful, says such a gift. Stop when the sign says stop. Stop. Look. Look around you at what another person in the same little town, but with different aspect, might experience. Look. Listen. Listen for what the warnings are and what they may mean. Warnings are good things. Jonathan Haidt has read ethnographies, traveled the world, and surveyed tens of thousands of people online. He and his colleagues have compiled a catalog of 6 fundamental ideas that commonly undergird moral systems: care, fairness, liberty, loyalty, authority, and sanctity. Alongside these principles, he has found related themes that carry moral weight: divinity, community, hierarchy, tradition, sin, and degradation. How well can we honestly ever see ourselves as others see us? All of us can learn from hate and his warnings to some measure. He is warning us, like the portly officer warned me, and like the Colgate professor warned me, and now, like this sermon, we hope with humility and love, is trying to warn you. There are at least 2 words of warning available to us with the lights of John 18:33 flashing behind us for a moment this morning. And they are both for all of us. One, though, may be a little bit more for those on the right, and the other a little bit more for those on the left. And as the Apostle Paul would put it, on this I have no word of the Lord, but I give my view, as 1 Corinthians 7:25. For those more on the right, you may be a 48-year-old mother living in southern New Hampshire or a 60-year-old plumber living in northern Connecticut. A couple of years ago, and again a couple of weeks ago, driving into town, so to speak, and passing Andy McGonis's farm, so to speak, you slowed down to do your civic duty and to enter an election season. You obeyed the speed limit, you thought about your choice, and you acted, chose, and voted. You came to a confusing intersection, and maybe, just maybe, you let a rolling stop substitute for a full stop. Maybe what you thought you meant by that action choice vote was, you see in hindsight, not what it means. What you meant is not what it means. What it means is what it does to others. So you see in the rearview mirror, you see in conversation with a portly officer dressed up in a Sunday sermon, a country now thrust into a time of humiliation, mendacity, racial divides, diminution of women, fear of immigrants, neglect of the environment, support for the wealthy, disregard for the poor, a time of Charlottesville, Helsinki, and children taken from their mothers' arms. So, now, up comes a sermon in uniform and asks, "Do you know why we are having this conversation?" Well, we all have our moments when we slide through a stop sign. Here is good news. We can learn from our past and we can benefit from warnings. For those more on the left, you may be a 50-year-old college professor living in the Boston suburbs, or a 22-year-old musician making ends meet in the East End. It may be this morning, there is warning in the morning for you. Slow down. Slow down. The laws are meant for all of us. We are a country of laws and not of men, as my college classmate Kiki Kleindienst's dad, Richard Kleindienst, said to us in the spring of 1975, just before he went off to prison, one of the last convicted in the Watergate affair. The laws, including the traffic laws, the laws, including stop signs and yield signs, the laws from sea to shining sea and from border to border are for all of us. You will not turn a 330 million person ship around in one fell swoop. It will take a decade or more, and that is if we really work at it. And it will take a just regard for just law, liberty, and justice for all. So there are not shortcuts. And up comes a sermon in uniform and asks, "Do you know why we're having this conversation?" Well, we all make mistakes and have our moments when we slide through a stop sign. Here is good news. We can learn from our past, and we can benefit from warnings. When was the last time you were interviewed by legal authorities? When were you asked to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Here, John 18:33, in his last hours, Jesus is interviewed by Pilate. Such a strange gospel passage, wherein the one interviewed becomes the questioner, wherein the one accused levies accusation, wherein the one intending to interrogate is himself interrogated, wherein not power, but truth has the last word. The Holy Scripture The strange world of the Bible is holy because it is healthy, and we need its nourishment, its strange teaching, far more than any other watery diet of merely spiritual meditation. Jesus said, "You say that I am a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice."